Thanks for checking out this episode of the Bureau Briefing. Before we get to the show, there are a couple of companies we really want to thank. Our sponsors. 10,000 Feet. You know, if you haven't checked them out lately, you need to check them out. They make this simple but powerful software, and it just helps you make confident decisions about what's going on with your projects and your teams. Also, MailChimp. MailChimp has been an amazing supporter of the Bureau community since day one, and they are everywhere we go, and they just love digital agencies. And you need to realize they're not just an email tool, and they're not just a marketing automation tool. They're a second brain for your business. They can give you insights, and they can help you automate your e-com store. It's just amazing. So make sure and check out MailChimp as well. And now, let's get on to the show.
Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. Today, we have part two of our interview with Ruben and Sherry Johnson, a.k.a. Fly Media Productions. Now, if you haven't listened to part one, please go and do this. It is an amazing story of overcoming and perseverance. And if you have listened to part one, we're getting ready to start right after they've decided to name the company Fly Media Productions. Listen in.
Like, you don't have to worry about saying the wrong thing or like, oh, crap, I just slipped into how I really talk. You know what I mean? While you're having a conversation. Well, so
Fly Media allowed us to be who we are 100%. And it wasn't like we were competing with our company.
Yeah.
Or trying to be something that we weren't.
That's been a process, though. It's also been something like we're still working on it now to this day. Like, it's like we worried so much, even like with this conversation. I'm like, I don't want it in any way give the impression we're the success story yet.
Right.
Or, I mean, right. I know we will be. But we're not where we want to be yet. Like,
you know, it's interesting. There's this quote. And if you, I mean, we're friends and we're going to see each other a lot more. And you're going to hear me say this like a dozen times. But this quote changed me. And it's Henry David Thoreau. And he said, beware of any enterprise that requires a change of clothing. And
whoa,
if you put a tie on. To do whatever this is, short of a wedding or a funeral, right? But if you have to change who you are to be a part of something, it's never going to work out because you're not being true to yourself.
I'm speaking our language.
So that's, I mean, that's what Fly Media is, right? That's your Thoreau moment where you realize Liquid Web is not us. And it's not the, you know, 100 other companies that have a variation of the word liquid. And I mean, when we started Engine, we were like, okay, we're going to need to be some sort of a color and some sort of a martial artist. So we're going to be Red Ninja or Blue Samurai or, you know, and I was just like, they're all taken. What are we going to do? So it's like, it's just amazing to me to hear that you got there and now you're still being focused on that. And I hate the word authentic anymore because it's become a buzzword, but you're focused on that, the real Ruben and Sherry, the real Fly Media, and getting that out there. And I have a question. So you said you started this and you didn't have a computer. Now, and you didn't have clients, and you started it because you needed money, because you also needed something where you could work from home, and but obviously you were at this kind of crossroad.
Yes, we needed money too. We were living in the project.
How do you start a tech company without a computer?
Wow, that's a really good one.
Thank God for the library.
It's the amazing fly
thank
duo.
Thank God for
like,
the
how do you do this?
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, we have to really say thank you to the Woonsocket Library, the Cumberland Library, the Providence Library.
Lincoln Library.
The Lincoln Library. Oh my God, yes, the Lincoln Library, the Rentham Library. That's how we started. We went to the library and got every book we could.
And VHS.
And VHS tapes. Like, we watched all the tapes from the 90s that Microsoft had made on it, on creating websites, and it helped us tremendously. And then we used to, like, you at the library, you like rent time on the computer. It doesn't cost any money.
Okay.
But so that was part of how we were learning. And then I used to go to my dad's house and we'd practice there on his computer. But my dad didn't like us saving stuff on his computer. He's very, very particular about it. So, like, yes, I know. He didn't like us saving stuff. Oh, so like we had to be very careful, and like he didn't want me to install software on it. So that made it challenging. But Dad,
do you not know who we are? We are Fly Media Productions. We got to save stuff.
And all he's thinking exactly. And he's thinking, hey, I paid a lot of money for this computer. You better not break it.
Yeah, he is. That's well, he's a dad. That's exactly. He knows who you are. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. That's a dad. But the fact that he let us do it means he had a lot of faith in us, because he was always so worried about the computer. But
so that's how we got our very, very initial start in training. We taught ourselves from whatever we can get our hands on.
We used Notepad. That's how we coded it, because it came on a computer and it was already installed. And then a friend of ours – for
fifth
anniversary, a friend of ours that we had had, he was like a mix of a brother and an uncle to me. Like, he was super pivotal in my life. I had known him years before I had met Sherry. And I had been there for him, and I was more thinking of it, he's my friend, I'm gonna be there for him. I had more thought of it like that, but it was a really challenging time of his life for several years. I had been there for him. I had done whatever I could to support him, what he was going through. And then when he came out of that on the other side, he was doing pretty well for himself. He owned a couple of like painting businesses and stuff like that. And he turned around and he said, when he found out what we were doing, he's like, went down to the local Walmart. And this is how it is. If you don't know about tech, you go to where you think you get tech. And he went in there and he talked to the clerk. And this is the funniest story when I think about it. I'm like, I got to love him, man. And he goes up to the guy in the computer department. He's like, I need you to point out the best computer in the store. He's like, the best computer. I don't care about the money. What's the best computer you have in here? And he's a big dude. Like, he's a big ass dude. Like, he makes me look small. And so the dude brought him over a computer and he's like, is this the best one you got in the store? Is this got everything in it that somebody needs? He's like, because this is my boy. He's like, this better be the best one. He's like, look, this is the best computer, XYZ, blah, blah, blah. And he bought that computer. He bought a few other things with it, and he gave it to us for our anniversary. And I was just like, remember, just like, to this day, that still hits me. It changed our whole life. Like, and it was an HP Pavilion with Windows Millennium. And Windows Millennium, I don't think it's like just come out, and it changed our whole world, because we had a computer now in our house. And like, when you have it in your house, we didn't have to drive to the library every day anymore. I didn't have to drive to my dad's house. We didn't have to like it was in our house. We could literally just walk in,
spend hours
doing it, and not have to like try to figure out a commute or the bus or driving or anything. It changed everything. We spent so many hours, like it changed everything. It was amazing. It was the most powerful gift he helped give us an opportunity. And I'm forever grateful. So that's part of why we try to, like, any way we can help other people, we try to, because like sometimes for him, that may not have been a huge like thing for him to have to do, as far as it may not have been something that was hard for him to do because he had the money, but he made the effort and did something that helped somebody else that changed our world. And I kind of look at us helping other people the same way. We might be able to help someone in a way that's not like, oh, it's super hard for us to do it, but with our expertise, we might be able to help them in a way that's kind of like relatively easier for us, but it might be pivotal for them in some way too.
Well, I think, you know, for people that are listening, and you hear people say stuff like what you just said, Ruben, and you're like, oh, that's nice. No, I have to say, when we spent time together at Owner Summit and we were out by the fires and you were talking about, you know, you and Sherry, and you were talking about Fly Media, you know, it's real. You can tell it's part of the essence of who the two of you are. is this need not only to create your own path, but to make sure that you're helping the people that you meet. And it was one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the show. And one of the reasons I was so glad to finally meet you in person was because I could feel it in the things that you were doing around social. And so I'm just so glad to hear you say that, because it's just unfathomable to me that you could have a company, and granted, maybe the clients weren't always there, but you didn't have the basic tools, and yet you fought, you found a way. I'm just baffled. How did you meet with clients? How did you present work? Like, all I can think is, you know, of any other craftsperson who has to do this, and they don't have the ability, they might have the ability, but they don't have the tools and the resources. So how do you convince clients, and how do you work with them when you've got this, you know, humble beginning?
Wow, that was really interesting. I love that question.
The struggle was real.
Yeah, the struggle was real. It's funny because when we started, I went the old school hustling route. I literally walked the main streets and went in every business locally to offer them website services. I walked around with a folder under my arm and I think some sort of briefcase, and I had printouts I had made. Yeah. And I just went in every business. We didn't know anybody.
We had no connections. We didn't come from anything.
Yeah.
You know, like we just didn't know anyone.
We knew we could do it. And we're like, we had that optimism and we were young. So we're like, hey, we got to make it work. So we went into every business, all these tiny little shops and t-shirt shops and whatever, barbershops. It didn't even matter. We just like, that was the first thing we did. And then when we started going to Providence, which was a bigger city than Woonsocket, and it has more like corporate buildings and all that. One of the things we did is we'd always like, so it is a funny story. There was a really cool little restaurant that we saw, and I wanted to go in there and see if they'd be interested in a website, but our car was like a hoop. It was garbage. So we parked down the street and around the corner just to make sure no one could see the car.
Man.
And then we walked up and tried to be all nonchalant because it was the middle of the summer, so it was really hot. And I'm like, okay, walk up the street nonchalant. And we went in there. The lady was really nice. She heard us out and stuff, made a follow-up, I think, appointment with us. We didn't ever end up getting that one, but we got one nearby for a cake thing. And we just used to make sure we parked far away. Mm-hmm. And we always met them at their business and made it super convenient for them. So we'd make sure we were there whenever they wanted to be there. And that's one thing. If you don't have a place to meet people and you're meeting at their – you're able to make it easy for them.
Yep.
So I think that worked out to be able to.
So selling technology.
But that's what we always did.
There you go.
Yes.
That is a question that I hope you ask everybody, because that is the thing that I am most intrigued by, is how did you get your first client or your first few clients? Because it was so, so hard for us. And the thing that like really changed our life as far as bringing in clients was Twitter. When we ever got on Twitter, we got 90% of our clients from Twitter, for a while. And, you know, it's only been like recently, the last several, you know, few years that it's started to die down. And we're like looking in other places as well. But Twitter was a game changer for us.
Yeah. Sherry was bringing in clients off of Twitter left and right. I mean, she was like, she's amazing when it comes to like.
And it wasn't just like putting out your business stuff in your articles and all that. We did all that, but it was also, you know, doing the search and seeing who's looking for a site and what, you know, and then looking at that person and seeing if there's somebody you want to work with. Cause like I always say to Ruben, like we're interviewing them kind of thing. Like we're just as picky as to who
Absolutely.
I'm actually going to reach out to and in some ways it was better because I could see them. I could see what they're doing. If it was somebody we wanted to be involved with before I even ever reached out to them, versus you get emails that come in, you don't know who these people are and they're already starting a conversation with you. So in some ways that was awesome, but it was a lot of work and it was a lot of time.
We used to say it's better to have a velvet rope than an empty parking lot. And that was the thing for us. It was, and to your point, it's like, be choosy about who you want to work with. But it's hard to be choosy if you don't have a little bit of cash put away.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons why I'd always kept a day job. Mm-hmm. I'd always had some sort of day job. It had usually had zero to do with tech, mm-hmm. but because we were being so choosy, so it made
there
it a real challenge to like get up and going. At a certain point, that became a crutch because I did it for like literal years and years and years and years.
Also, leaving the projects is kind of a crutch and it's very scary. Because when we first started, you know, our rent was super, super low. And as we started to get more business and make more money, our rent would go up and go up and go up. But that's how it is. And then when you start making some decent money, it's almost like you're thrown out. So you hesitate and you hold back and you don't push as hard as you would if you didn't have that crutch. You know, and I don't say it like people are leaning on that in a bad way. It's very scary, especially when you've been in it for a long time and you're working your way out of it and you're at the end and you're like, okay, this is it. Once we take, you know, once we pass this dollar amount, we're out of here and it's 100% on our own. We're 100% on our own. That was very scary for us.
And then when you don't really know anyone else who does it, who looks like you and comes from where you come from, that's scary. 'Cause that's like,
yeah, and back home, we really didn't get a lot of work from back home. Most of our clients have always come from across the states. And I think a huge part of that is because people who look like us back home didn't do a lot of successful, like,
businesses where they could afford
them. Yeah, they weren't looked at that way. People like us were not looked at in that way. So people just didn't look at us that way. They didn't trust us in that way. But our clients came from all over the country. They always have.
And I think sometimes people would be surprised back home, like when we'd be like, oh yeah, we did this website for XYZ company. And like, y'all did that? Like how? Like, you know what I mean? But it's like, I think we're all in the same boat when all you see is like certain things and that's it. And that's you stay in that lane and you don't think any bigger than that.
And then we come here and we have conversations with all kinds of people, white, black, all ages. And people just look at us and take us seriously, and it's the weirdest thing. It's still weird.
And you
it's
mean
still
weird. You mean once you got to Atlanta?
Good weird, though. Amazing weird.
Yeah.
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 Because they're used to seeing it here. They're used to seeing people who look like us who have success and are doing well and are doing this, that, and the other thing. So they look at us like we're just like everybody else. And we're like, wow, they're taking us seriously.
Like,
we weren't used to meeting people face to face. Because it just what didn't work for us. It didn't work for a long time.
That is so powerful. And as somebody who didn't struggle, as somebody who was privileged coming up, to think about what you went through and then finding a place where you were accepted, that had to make your heart grow.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Sure.
Yes. Yes, and so, emphatically.
So
yes.
You're still in Atlanta. How long have you been in Atlanta now? 6 years in Atlanta.
Yep.
6 years.
Things are going well for Fly Media?
Things are going a hell of a lot better than they were back home. They're still not where we want them to be.
Carl, you're
I'm sorry. We're just playing. No.
I'm just kidding. You can ask that question.
I know I'm successful when Sherry is going to play with me. When she's going to say, I just poked him a little bit. There you go.
No, but it's good and I appreciate it. I mean, it's good to keep your guest honest, you know?
Hey, you want real?
So what's next? Like, where are you guys heading? What's the next goal?
I want to get to like the money goals of the folks that we see that we really, really admire and where we work to emulate on the business side. I want to like make really good money. I love the examples of folks like Will Reynolds. And there's so many people from the conferences. I mean, I feel it's unfair to just pick one person to say, yo, I want to like taste some of the fruit of what they're doing for our business. But we want that, but we also want to like, there's so many damn things I want.
Our goal right now, this year, we're focusing a lot on building relationships with people and hopefully being able to get to a point where me and Ruben are actually growing the business, because we've been doing everything just the two of us, which is part of the challenge. It's, you know, you know how it is. You're doing everything, including the work. So going to Owner Summit was just like very eye-opening for us. And we saw ourselves in a place that we haven't seen ourselves in a while. And it kind of reinvigorated us. And we're like, we want to get to a point where we can actually not have to do so much of the work and more focus on growing the business and growing relationships and getting the business out there in front of people so that we can actually get more work and then be able to help other people out, you know, by giving them work and, you know, people that may not necessarily have such an easy time getting into to the business or the industry itself as well.
Yeah, I think that I totally agree. I think that statement that Will said when he said, think about how many more people you could give jobs to help have a better life if you were willing to grow.
Right.
That really resonated. Because the idea of having employees always scared me to death. Like, it always scared me to death. And when he said that, it hit me like, oh, yeah, we could be those people who give XYZ many people jobs. Like, holy shit, that changed everything. So now it's like growing has a bigger purpose for us, and increasing revenue means way more than just helping us in a more real way that we can really see right in front of us. Like, we can just see so much of how we could be change makers. And I think the conversation that I had with Marcus Netto about the things he's doing and where he is, it's like kind of like a similar thing where, like, when you're helping people with decent jobs and you're giving people a chance who wouldn't may not necessarily ever get a chance outside of you offering them an opportunity or making way for an opportunity, that's huge. Like that.
Okay.
So that's where we want to be, and we're certainly not there yet. We still deal with the boom bust, and we're trying to get away from that as far as, and I know that's like a lot of agencies struggle with that challenge. So we're still trying to figure out good strategies to eliminate the problems that can cause.
Yeah, we still have our share of problems. I think everybody has, everybody does. You know, I totally was going to say something and I really forgot what I was going to say. I don't know. I was totally going to say something. Well, I forgot.
I have to say, my bad. I'm so glad you're part of the Bureau community now. And, you know, when you come to an event, and we're trying to make it so that it's easier for people to become part of the community, even if you happen to live halfway around the world, because the collaboration that happens and the support that happens. Last year, we saw three shops that thought they were going to have layoffs that were able to actually take work off of other shops that were overloaded and able to save those teams. And, you know, those are obviously bigger company problems. But at the same time, we're seeing, you know, shops that are younger or shops that are smaller getting pulled in to support other shops that have work. And for me, like listening to what you're talking about and what your goals are, it feels like they're really aligned with what we want to do at the Bureau in terms of being better together. So welcome. And thank you so much for being on the show today and for sharing your story. It's really inspirational.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's a legit honor. We feel welcome. Yeah, we do. We love this community. Yeah.
I was not expecting that, to be honest. When we went to Owner Summit, I wasn't expecting to feel as welcome as we were and do and are. that's been nice.
It was from the moment I stepped into the what do you call that thing? The boardwalk.
The welcome,
thing.
The reception.
And I saw Lori and Brett. Like, it was just an amazing thing. Just her smile and she knew who I was when I walked up there. And it's just like that made all the difference in the world. And it just like totally made. And then, you know, the next two people I talked to, I said hey to Marcus and his wife, and then Jim and Brian. And from there, it just continued to just get better and better. All three of y'all have put together an amazing community, and
We feel blessed.
Yeah. Hello. Put the praise hands up. It's amazing.
And we're so happy that it happened at the beginning of the year too, because it just, we feel like we've got so much time in this year to kind of like move into some new goals and get some things accomplished before next year when we meet everybody again.
Yes, exactly. Cause that's the goal too, is like next year for us to be there and to like see everyone again, if we don't get to see them sometime in the next, before then this mm-hmm. year. Yes. And anyone who's open to collabing, we would love to collab. Go. So mm-hmm. well, my sales pitch.
You got to get it in. That's what you do. You're a hustle, right? You got to hustle. So
yes, exactly. Well,
everybody that listened in, thank you so much. This is the first in our Origin Stories series. And I have to say, I think it's one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. So stay tuned and we'll talk to everybody soon.